We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
The history that most of us have been taught or focus on usually centers around the people and events that shaped our nation, state, or the towns and cities that we live in. Often that history is full of dates, stories, and well-known names. Of course, right now, there are debates going on across the country about who and what should be included in that history. But what we don't hear as often is the seamier side of history. And every place has those stories they don't highlight in the history books. But those tales can tell us a lot about the place, its people, and how they evolved. That history can be fascinating and entertaining as well. A great example is the Lancaster Vice Project. Lancaster was known as a wide-open city in the early part of the 20th century, where prostitution, gambling, and drinking were rampant, and law enforcement sometimes looked the other way. The Lancaster Vice Project includes a walking tour, a podcast, a blog, and articles in LNP. Allison Kibler is a professor of American Studies and Women's Gender and Sexuality at Franklin and Marshall College. Dr. Kibler runs the Lancaster Vice Project, and she's with us on The Spark today. Dr. Kibler, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. That's a great introduction to the project.
Well, I hope I didn't answer all the questions right there.
No, I think you did a great job of highlighting one of the underlying purposes of the project, which is to tell the stories of people who don't usually make it into history books or onto historical markers, like the people who are involved in vice in the early 20th century in Lancaster are, for the most part, you know, working class people who don't usually leave a record of like accomplishments that we think of as historically relevant. But that's, I hope to counter that.
Well, how did you get started on this project? I know you've been working on it for some time.
Yes. I first came to know about a tremendous historical resource in Lancaster because of a project a student did, I think about a decade ago. They wrote a paper that used the Law and Order Society collection at Lancaster History, which is just a few blocks from my office at F&M. And this archive is basically the records left behind by anti-vice investigators who came to Lancaster in 1913 to try to help some reformers in Lancaster put the lid on vice. And these reformers came and then worked undercover. They interview people throughout the city, bartenders, pool hall hustlers, waiters, sex workers, brothel keepers. Then the amazing thing that they do after that is they go back to their hotel rooms and they type up their notes. And those notes have been left behind. Almost 800, 900 pages of notes about their travels through the city. If those didn't exist, we wouldn't really know this history to the extent that we do, but they're an amazing, amazing set of records.
All right. So amazing. How would you describe them? And 800 pages, it almost sounds like a nonfiction book or even a fiction novel.
Oh, I say to myself many times, you couldn't really write better fiction than what they're writing. And in a way, sometimes it's helpful to think about it as fiction in a sense, because it is, sometimes it reads like a transcription of an event or a conversation, the things that they type up. But I don't think they can truly be that. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense to me that they would have been in disguise as a traveling salesman, for example, and then have a notebook taking notes on a conversation that they strike up with, you know, a woman on the corner downtown. But so the record that they leave is incredibly detailed, but also very one-sided and maybe deceptively detailed. But even though there's an undoubtedly bias in the accounts, they are very they're a very interesting window onto the world of vice. You do get snippets, and sometimes more than snippets, about the history of people who are involved in commercial sex or gambling, what their goals and aspirations are, what some of their struggles have been. And those are the things that you would not otherwise get.
There may be people that have always thought, maybe still do think, that this couldn't happen in Lancaster. This conservative, religious community that has prostitution, gambling, drinking, how could that happen? Was there anything in those reports that maybe shocked you or surprised you?
Definitely. I mean, the extent of it is still surprising. Well, let me say two things. One is that Lancaster is not alone. So there are cities across the country, larger, sometimes smaller, that have basically the same set of political dynamics going on. So in Lancaster, the set of conditions that makes this happen is that there is a government that's running as a corrupt machine. And in Lancaster, that happens to be a Republican administration. In other cities, it's a Democratic machine. So police officers are political appointees. Factory inspectors are political appointees. There are stories of kind of vote buying. So in that context, vice is running in basically with the full knowledge of city officials and police officers. And it's not just that they sometimes do nothing. They largely do nothing and then sometimes participate themselves. So vice in Lancaster is not a secret. Maybe you could describe it as an open secret, but it's definitely running in cooperation with law enforcement in Lancaster.
So what
here's some examples from the archives. There's reports in the newspaper that police officers basically don't even patrol the streets at night. They just go to the firehouse and go to sleep on their overnight shifts. And then there's also a report. Now, this has not been fully substantiated, but two newspapers do report that there seems to be prostitution actually running out of City Hall, so or the county courthouse, so that women are coming in the back door at all hours of the night. And when they report on that in the paper, they kind of jokingly refer to the courthouse. They're sarcastically, they call it the Temple of Justice. And then in that article, they also refer to like Republican gangsters who run the city. So there's, I guess, just to underscore the extent that this is widely endorsed, at least like implicitly, and it's really part of a political regime in Lancaster.
When was this?
It's going on at least through the late 19th century, through the Republican machine is voted out of office in the early 1920s. That doesn't mean that vice ends in Lancaster, but there's kind of a new approach to it. And the fact that the Republican machine is voted out of office is partly due to the work of the anti-vice reformers, including the kind of led by the rector of St. James Episcopal Church, Reverend Twombly. And one way to think about the political struggles over vice is actually that the reformers who are speaking out against commercial sex, gambling, and drinking, they actually are doing that as part of a larger political agenda. Like, they are seeking political change from that Republican machine, and arguing against vice is a good way to do it. So it's part of a bigger political drama. And I try to think of it in terms of political struggle instead of like individual morality. That, and some people, I think, want to continue to think about, you know, sex and gambling and drinking as, you know, personal vices. But I think the story is most accurately understood as a political struggle and an economic struggle about, you know, how to economically survive.
Dr. Kibler, one of the things you mentioned right up front in the first article I read in LNP is that Lancaster was referred to or described as a wide open city. What does that mean?
It means that commercial sex, gambling, and alcohol were like widely available, really outside of any kind of police regulation. Well, I would say it's not that they're completely unregulated. Once in a while, there's police action against a particular brothel or against a bar or a pool hall that's open on Sunday. But it's very uneven, and it's basically the system allows vice to be widely accessible, you know, through the early 20th century for sure. The investigators that come to town in 1913, they come for a month and they work undercover. Three men, some who become quite famous in their careers, and then one woman is also here. Her name's Minerva Mullen. And their evidence that they collect as they work around the city undercover, they produce a report that is designed to kind of shock the community into acting against how widespread and open commercial sex is in Lancaster. And in their report, they say there's 190 professional women, that's the word they use, and there are 40 houses. That means a brothel or a furnished rooming house that's basically used for sex workers and their clients, like to rent by the hour or maybe overnight.
40.
This is larger than other comparable cities. And then they say, we're not really even confident that we've counted everything. So it seems like they're asserting like this is more widespread than in other comparable cities. And then they compare some of the brothels in Lancaster to ones that they know about in New York City and Philadelphia and say, you know, these seem like those brothels in the big cities, you know. So it's definitely something Lancaster is known for, and people travel to Lancaster for vice specifically.
Why, in fact, you mentioned the word travel, but is that one of the reasons? You quote a man who ran one of these brothels as saying one of the reasons that the brothels were so popular is because Lancaster had a lot of travelers.
Right. I think it's interesting some of the geography of the commercial sex in Lancaster really does seem to focus on travel. So the hotels in Lancaster are very close to the old train station downtown, which is on the corner of Chestnut and Queen. And then if you just walk like one or two blocks up Queen Street, you're going to basically encounter the central commercial district of Lancaster, hotels, restaurants, theaters, like lowbrow and highbrow theaters, and pool halls. All of those commercial venues for nightlife that kind of would cater to travelers, they're also hubs for vice. Maybe the vice isn't exactly going to take place in those rooms. Sometimes there is a back room that sex workers would use, but they're places where you would find out where to go, where you would meet someone who is a sex worker or who is a category of young woman known as a charity girl. And they get a lot of attention in these reports. These investigators are very interested in the charity girl, otherwise known as the treating girl. And she was someone she usually worked a factory job during the day, or maybe they're a clerk in a candy store, in a department store. So they're out in the city by themselves, but they're not making very much money. And they want access to this nightlife, the movie theaters, the restaurants that they see downtown. So they start to exchange sexual favors for dates or sometimes for consumer goods. And those women appear very often in the investigators' reports, largely because the investigators are trying to talk them out of becoming like a full-time professional woman. So a lot of their dreams and struggles emerge in the reports. They're in a way more interested in them than they are in the women who are already working full-time as prostitutes in brothels.
Who were the professionals, as they refer to them? I mean, what was the typical one like? And who were the charity girls?
Right. I mean, charity girls are sometimes they're high school girls in some cases. In other cases, they're women who are like working, they're wage earning single women. Some of them are living at home with their families. Other of them are living in rooming houses. But they're basically trying to make it economically as a single person without earning very much money. And also, they're kind of interested in the romance and adventure of the nightlife that's downtown. So there's dance halls, movie theaters, vaudeville theaters, and all of these things are kind of exciting for everyone, really. But also, if you have a job that's kind of drudgery during the day, you would especially be like looking for the respite and excitement of some of this nightlife. So they're there. They are out there on the streets. They kind of share the streets with the full-time sex workers. And they actually refer to each other sometimes, which is interesting. Sometimes you'll hear the voice of a full-time sex worker in the investigator's reports who says things like, you know, the charity girls are just kind of, they're giving it away for free. Like they're kind of ruining our business model, which is interesting. And the charity girls really want to protect their reputations in a sense. And they say, you know, I'm not anything like, you know, a full-time prostitute. But you can see the one woman whose story is very prominent in the investigators' reports is named Barbara Foreman. And she talks a lot about how she's struggling with some family tensions. She's working as a tobacco wrapper. She earns her wages through piecework, which, you know, means she's getting paid like per cigar, I think. And then she wants to leave Lancaster. She talks about her dreams of going to New York City and get out of her job here. And she talks to investigators about having a particular romance that's interesting to her. Maybe he's going to take her to New York City. And then at the same time, the investigators notice that she has a friend named Marie, that Marie seems to be already working as a sex worker, and that the brothel keeper at Marie's brothel is starting to try to recruit Barbara Foreman. So they spend a lot of time trying to encourage Barbara Foreman, like, not to go with the brothel keeper whose name is May Snyder. And it seems unresolved at the end of their month-long investigation. It's not clear what's happened to Barbara Foreman, but in additional investigations that go on after those, after November of 1913, she does appear to have moved into May Snyder's brothel. Mm. So that drama of kind of what's going to happen to you as a single wage earning woman is part of the significance of the reports.
Well, there is drama in this as well. Now, I have to ask this question. I mentioned in the introduction that the Lancaster Vice Project includes a podcast, a blog, and an article in LNP, and there will be others, right, in LNP?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
But
a new one coming out soon, yeah.
Okay, walking tour. What would one see on a walking tour?
I know. Well, we do kind of look up and down the street that was once considered, which was once the highest concentration of brothels. Even though Lancaster didn't have a single red light district, the highest concentration was on Water Street. But there's a wide variety from one end, from the north, from one end to the other. It's not, the red light district is not monolithic by any means. And one end of that red light district is racially integrated, which is, I think, a significant piece of the story, race, because Vice is racially integrated and in some ways more racially integrated than other aspects of Lancaster society at the time. So that's an important piece of the story, that the concentration of commercial sex in Lancaster overlaps with neighborhoods that are home to most of the Black population of Lancaster, immigrants and working class Lancastrians. And that's usually deliberate, that these Vice districts kind of get put in places that are impoverished and then kind of reinforce stigma about race and poverty.
So we're almost out of time. Your website has all this information. What is the website?
The website is LancasterVice, one word, .com. And you can link to the podcasts there and sign up for a walking tour and read the blog.
Dr. Allison Kibler, thank you very much for being with us. So fascinating.
Thank you so much, Scott. I enjoyed it. Okay.